for this afternoon is 96-1074 Noah's Ark Family Park versus Board of Review of the Village of Lake Delton. Representing the Board of Review is Richard Cross. Mr. Cross.
Thank you. May it please the court. What I would like to do is start out my remarks today by discussing what this case is not about, in order to simplify matters. This is not about a drastic increase in assessment on Noah's Ark's property in Lake Delton. The word drastic appears many times throughout the brief of Noah's Ark so as to characterize this as an unjustified increase, and I think the record clearly shows that it is justified. It also claims that this is not about singling out Noah's Ark for specific treatment. This is not about that as well, because they were not the only property that was increased in 1995. This is also not about an illegal scheme to foist a greater portion of the tax burden on Noah's Ark. There's no evidence of such a scheme in the record, and there's no evidence in the record at all of any unfair shifting of the tax burden on Noah's Ark. Most importantly, this case is not about matters outside the record before the court, as the matters that are relevant are the ones that are in the record. And in the Noah's Ark's brief, you will find numerous references to matters outside of the record. For this is about the issue of whether or not in 1995, when the Board of Review set the assessment for Noah's Ark, whether or not the basis that we used to set that was made in good faith. And if it was made in good faith, and if it met the requirements of the law, and if there's any evidence to support that, it should be upheld. The court is very familiar, I am sure, with the requirements of review of a Board of Review proceeding, a decision. First question is whether or not the Board kept within its jurisdiction. Second one is whether it acted according to law. The third is whether its action was arbitrary, oppressive, or unreasonable and represented its will and not its judgment. And the fourth is whether the evidence was such that it might reasonably make the order or determination in question. Is our position that the record clearly supports that the Board of Review's decision met all of the criteria set forth, and that it was a proper decision and the right decision under the circumstances?
One of the things that concerns me is the number three, the arbitrary.
Right.
You have a 22.5 value on the transfer return. That's the transfer return value is used in assessing the property, and yet we have an $18 million assessment. Why isn't that arbitrary? What's in the record to support how you arrived at that?
In the record, you'll see the reason, the rationale that the assessor gave for that reduction was that because of the fact that he did not have accurate information other than the transfer return, the taxpayer refused to provide information other than the transfer return. He did not have information to go into the details of that transaction to see whether or not the entire $22.5 million was the fair value for that parcel.
Well, what is the transfer fee? What is it based on?
The transfer fee.
The statutes.
The transfer return is filed by the taxpayer when he purchases the property and records the deed. The transfer fee is set based upon the reported real estate value of that.
So this is self-reporting, and the self-report
That's
was
right.
22, whatever
That's
million.
Right. Okay. The taxpayer reported the $22.5 million as the value of the real estate. The assessor adjusted that by 20% reduction in that value, because he felt that based on equalized valuation set by Madison, that the village was at about 80 or 81%. Yes, that decision, okay, by the assessor is certainly questionable.
Mr. Cross, what does the record reflect in terms of the assessor's reasoning in doing the reassessment of the Noah's Ark property and not taking a similar approach in regard to the other commercial properties that had been sold in the village during that year?
The assessor's position was that the real estate at Noah's Ark is a unique parcel. It is a gigantic water park with go-kart tracks, boats, restaurants. There's no comparable property in the tax district, or I submit in the state of Wisconsin.
But what?
It is a truly...
Sure. No, go ahead.
It is a truly unique parcel. I think that where the assessor was getting his guidelines was in the decision in NS Associates versus Greendale, which involved the Southridge Mall. You had a very similar circumstances where you had a single parcel that was unlike anything else in town. It sold for four times its previously assessed value, and it was the only parcel that was raised that year. The assessor's decision was based on his understanding that this was a unique property, that it was not comparable to other property in the district, and justified the increase. Keeping in mind that under Darcell and under the rule of 7032, he's required to use evidence of recent arm's length sale in establishing value.
But wouldn't that be true in regard to the other properties, the other commercial properties as well?
Yes, that would be true with regard to those other commercial properties. However, because the fact that that parcel is not comparable with the other parcels, the assessor believed, and I believe the law is, that he is not compelled to do that. The same argument was raised by the taxpayer in the Southridge case, and the Court of Appeals there held that absent a showing of a discriminatory motive, which if you follow the line of cases from Walters all the way up, in order for a rule of uniformity violation to occur, there generally has to be some motive that is either discriminatory or illegal or patently offensive to the taxpayer, to fairness, to occur. In Levine, for example, which is cited by Noah's Ark in support of its position, in Levine, the assessor admitted that he did not accept the older property's valuations. He rejected the sales. This isn't right. This can't be sold. He ignored the fact that comparable properties were being sold. He was assessing those at the sale prices, but not lifting up the other properties. That was a scheme to protect the existing homeowners in Fox Point from the impact of their property values being lifted by the fact their neighbors were building and expanding and being assessed at new. That's clearly comparable properties where there's an unfair shifting of the burden.
All right, so I want to stay on that, and I want to talk about comparability because you had family land, so you have this unique, the world's largest water park existing. Now you have family land, and yet family land is a park similar, and is that not comparable? Is it just because it doesn't have as many water sports, or what defines it?
The assessor did increase the assessment on family land as well. Family land was a water park, and the assessor took the position that was roughly comparable to Noah's Ark, and he did do a substantial increase on their parcel. The Board of Review did not feel comfortable with his analysis on family land because he was deprived of information from Noah's Ark within which to base the comparable valuation for family land, and they adjusted his recommended assessment downward.
So comparability must mean something very unique, because you cannot compare what you're saying. You cannot compare a golf course or a motel or any other commercial property to this because of its unique quality.
Well, I don't say that. That's what the case law and the Department of Revenue says, is that comparability, as you know, is defined in Rosen. And it's size, location, use, and the various factors that go into the utility of the property. You certainly would probably be on very thin ice comparing an amusement park like Noah's Ark with a golf course or with a hotel.
But counsel, isn't that what the Court of Appeals opinion stands for?
Yes, it is. And I think that the Court of Appeals has tipped the tables a little bit. So now you start sliding into speculation as to challenges based on the rule of uniformity. What the Court of Appeals held was that comparability is not a factor in a uniformity appeal because all properties are essentially the same. They're all taxable or non-taxable.
Did they say comparability is not a factor, or did the Court of Appeals opinion say that all there's only one classification, and if that classification, in that classification, they're subject to taxation, then they're all comparable. I mean, which way is it? Or maybe it doesn't make a difference.
Well, actually, what they said was that comparability does not matter unless comparability matters. In a rather convoluted paragraph, they skipped over that in their rush to get to what they considered was the meat of the case. And I think that by doing so, by removing comparability from the factor, when a taxpayer comes in and says, I have an assessment of X on my property, and I have nine other parcels that I feel are underassessed, does that prove that my property is overassessed? And unless there's a ability to compare those properties and how they've been valued, like there was in Hensel, where you had agricultural land laying right next to the same agricultural land, one being assessed at twice what the other one was assessed at. Those were comparable lands. In all the decisions up to the Court of Appeals decisions, in which rule of uniformity has been applied to reverse the Board of Review, there has been comparable properties mentioned by the Supreme Court as a factor, okay, in the analysis. And that makes sense, because comparability is the link that keeps you grounded in reality. What happens with the Court of Appeals when they say comparability does not apply, and that for rule of uniformity purposes, it doesn't apply? You've left Gottlieb behind, because Gottlieb holds that you have to have practical uniformity, not absolute uniformity.
Let me ask you about a struggle that I've been having in sort of analyzing this and have you address it. As I see it, there are two kinds, maybe others, but there are at least two kinds of problems. One is what is the rate or the evaluation of the property, and I forgot the name of the case, but the one with the farmland, which is one of the standards, you know, and it's the comparability property. So you've got farmland side by side, and if it's reasonably the same farmland with the same kind of ability to grow crops in the same area, clearly comparable property is important in that kind of analysis to see if one is assessed at $100 an acre and another at $600 an acre. But it seems to me that's not what this case is about. This case is about, as I see it, the methodology of deciding what the fair market value is. And Noah's Ark has been, the fair market value, or the value for assessment purposes under 7032 was a recent sale. But yet there were all these other properties, these six other properties that had sales in 94, that apparently the sale price was not used. And I'd like you to fit that into the case law for me as to what, if that isn't a different breed of case than one where you're simply comparing what the assessed value of comparable businesses are. There is a difference, isn't there, in terms of the methodology of determining the assessed value versus...
Let me take you back to what the assessor was facing when he received notice of the sale of Noah's Ark. Under 7032, he's required to use a full value assessment, and he's required to use evidence of a recent sale. He used that.
Yeah, and Noah's Ark isn't challenging that at this point.
Well,
but.
I guess that may be true, and I may not be true. It just depends.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But he was fit with that situation. Under the scenario, he said then, well, there's another water park in town, Family Land, I'll increase them as well. He has to follow the statute of 7032 and using that. Because if he doesn't do that, then let's give Noah's Ark a pass. They don't have to pay their fair share on the taxes. The rest of the taxpayers will pick up that difference. But he knows that that one is worth four or five times what had been assessed at. He also knows that he's required under the statute and under Darcell to use that value. And I think it would be arbitrary for him not to use that value on this assessment. He then takes it to the Board of Review when the taxpayer objects. The taxpayer comes in and says, well, that was a mistake on the tax transfer return. We've got a new one that we worked up, and it's worth only about $8 million. And by the way, there's nine other properties or whatever that were sold, and you didn't increase them or assess them based on that.
And that, which, you mean their sale prices?
Right. Which is kind of a mutually exclusive argument. Either you have a uniformity violation or you don't. And if you say use our $8 million figure based on the sale instead of the 22.5, it's irrelevant to the uniformity. You're conceding that there's not a uniformity problem.
Let me ask you, just going to interrupt you just for a second here. I was trying to figure out this from your brief and then from your answers. Is the argument that this property is unique, is that made in defense of why there is not an evaluation assessment of the property of its fair market value at some other means than by the purchase price? I mean, why does its uniqueness make it different than other properties that needed to be assessed after their sale?
I guess it's because of the situation in Lake Delton, and that is that the rules state that a motel is not necessarily comparable to another motel. I think you're getting out pretty thin in Wisconsin Dells, Lake Delton area with regard to hotel sales. If you have a hotel sale, you've got a lot of properties that would be roughly comparable, which leads to a revaluation, which was not within the budget constraints of the assessor at the time. Also, you're confronted with the war, the balancing between complying with 7032, requiring you to use the sale price, and uniformity. Well, absolute uniformity or practical uniformity? Gottlieb says it's practical uniformity. Gottlieb also says you don't have to be absolutely uniform with your methodology either, that you can use as long. The whole point here is to try to get a balancing and a fairness for the assessment for this property. It is our position that it's not appropriate, it's not proper to criticize the Board of Review's process and dig through the record to find where it went wrong. You look through the record to find evidence that what it did was correct and just under the circumstances. And I believe that that's what this record
did. Is the uniqueness argument made to explain why the only methodology is by using what was thought to be the purchase price?
No, the uniqueness is to explain why Noah's Ark and Family Land the sale prices were used to establish their values and the others were not.
Well, I don't understand that. I'm going to try it a different way. The general rule is all property is to be assessed at fair market value, right?
Correct.
Okay. There may be a number of ways of reaching fair market value.
Correct.
One way, and I guess usually thought the best way, is an arm's length sale that's recent, right?
Correct.
Okay. So to get uniformity, then one would assume that Lake Delton assessed all of its property at fair market value, or a percent thereof, like 80%, fair market value, and used the best optimum method of determining fair market value, generally this sale. Okay. So now, we agree on that so far? Okay. So if I'm going to show that something is not uniform, that taxation is not uniform, then I'm going to show that you do not assess everything at fair market value, or whatever you're using as fair market value isn't right, and you're using different techniques differently across the community, right? Okay. So now we agree so far?
So far, except that I think that at that last level, there comes the question of motivation on behalf of the taxing
authority.
That's
one of the particular cases where the assessor decided in his own head that these people were overpaying.
Yes.
And that's irrelevant. If they want to overpay, and this seems to be the times for overpaying, it's not overpaying because you've got a willing buyer and a willing seller, and there's nothing extraordinary about it. So other than that, we're okay. Now, you've got a sale. No one is claiming this sale doesn't represent fair market value. They could, but they're not, right?
Which sale are you talking about?
The $22 million sale for Noah's Ark.
There was considerable debate at the time, yes.
I know, but not here.
Okay.
And they're not challenging that here, are they?
Apparently not, although they do make references to the fact that their value was drastically increased, and I don't understand why they would be making that argument if they didn't agree with that value.
I know, but I sort of checked this out, looking for the argument that $22 million really didn't represent the real estate, that there was something else in there, and the real estate was only, you know, $500,000, and there was something else. But that's not made here. Isn't that right?
That's
we accept that the $22 million was fair market value
right.
between a willing buyer and a willing seller. Okay. And now they come in and say, okay, but here are six other commercial properties. They don't have to be the same. They have their rule is treat them uniformly, which is fair market value by recent purchases. And they say, here are, what is it, six or seven, and they give you the fact that in 1994, these were all sold. And yet the assessments don't reflect a substantial increase in sale price, increase over the assessment. One of them was, what, 91% or 191%, a large amount. So why, it doesn't seem uniform to me. It's a long way of getting down to the question, but I think that's another way of stating.
And that's a proper way to phrase the question, because...
Right.
But the real question becomes practical uniformity versus absolute uniformity.
Well, I can concede that, and every piece of property in town is not sold. And so you may have to take a percent. You say what happens in Madison, for example, is somebody looks at all the sales and says, you know, in each of the areas in town, the sales would indicate that the property value has gone up 5%. Now, it may not have gone up for every house that way, but that's the way it's treated. And that's close enough. But you're not even close when you look at it. Is this all the commercial property in Lake Delton?
Pardon?
It's more commercial property.
Significant, yes. There's much
but
more
this is all the ones that were sold, I assume.
These are the ones they've hand-selected to show the court as evidence that there has been...
Well, were there other commercial properties sold that were changes?
I'm not aware. I think there were one or two, but I'm not aware specifically. I don't think it's in the record.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, again...
What's the matter with Mike just saying, look, you got six other commercial properties... They went up from, what, 19% to, and I've forgotten what the exact percent is, but a lot, almost 100%. What's the matter with saying, hey, look, it's not uniform. You're not treating these people the same. Tell me what's the matter with that argument.
The argument is that you get into trouble by second-guessing the Board of Review.
That's what we're here for.
Well, but you are, but you're supposed to be looking for reasons to uphold them, not to where they made the mistake. They had an assessor who told them that this was the value for the property. They received counter-evidence saying that, no, it's this value. They had to choose. They chose the higher value, and apparently that's no longer an issue. That's a valid thing. Now, the question then becomes that even if this was not a perfect assessment, okay, was there an unfair shifting of the tax burden to the taxpayer? There's no evidence in the record of an unfair shifting of this tax burden. There's speculation. There's references to the reassessment. There's references to things outside this record that they want you to believe shows that. But there is no evidence in this record to substantiate an unfair shifting of the tax burden to this property. We've shown in our brief that if you just took your example and reassessed those properties at their reported sale prices, you would have to do the same to them. Their taxes would have gone up by $100,000. This is the fairness argument.
And why would that have happened? Because you only assessed them at 80%?
Yes. He reduced their assessment by 20% in order to bring it in line.
And everybody else should have been reduced by 20%.
Well, they were kind of.
Pardon me?
They were kind of. In the general see things as things change, the assessor and the board were striving to do that. The problem with going out and taking the motel, one of their motels was not raised. Taking a motel, you would then be stuck with reassessing all of them. And this is the dangerous slope. You would have then had those six properties, you would have had, I guarantee you, a number of other properties that would have been very comparable and would have had to have been increased, and now you've got a full-scale revaluation going. You go back to
Go ahead and finish.
If you finish, sir. You go back to what the state of mind was at the time, and the record shows that the Board of Review had in front of it two choices to make. It selected the one reported by the taxpayer as based on that valuation. It had the law from Court of Appeals decision in NS Associates that told them that just because you don't assess all these other properties doesn't mean you're in violation of the Rule of Uniformity.
When was the last time Lake Delton reassessed everything prior to the 1994?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Thank you. Justice Bradley, do you want to speak? Thank you, Mr. Cross. You will have time for rebuttal. Mr. Conley, you represent Noah's Park Family Park. I should tell you all that I should have done this earlier. Justice Babish will not be participating in this case.
Very good. May it please the court, I am Bill Conley from the law firm of Foley and Lardner, and we do represent the respondent, Noah's Ark. Mr. Cross suggested that at the outset that we should talk about what the case isn't about. It seems to me the first thing you said it wasn't about is exactly what it's about, and that is there was a drastic increase in the assessment. The question is whether or not it was justified. And on that, we agree. That is the question. Was this increase of just the single Noah's Ark parcel number 098 justified as compared to the other properties within the community?
Wasn't it justified simply by the reporting on the real estate transfer return that jumped up? There's an assumption that it's correct, and that was $22.5 million. So just on that alone, there would have been...
If the only issue under the uniformity clause were the accuracy of the valuation of this particular parcel, I would say that would be essentially correct. There's some issues on this record as the fact that that parcel was only one of nine parcels that were sold as part of his transfer tax return. There are other issues related to the fact that all of the improvement was applied by the assessor to the improvements and not to the land. But as a general matter, I would think that's right.
Yeah, and even with looking at the other nine parcels, but they went up from 19% to 93% or whatever, the point is this went up from, I think it was like several hundred percent up, as I say, if you assume that the $18 million figure is correct, then you are assuming. I mean, you're not contesting that.
When I said the other nine parcels, I meant parcels that were actually sold and part of the transfer tax return. I wasn't referring to the whole of the group of properties. But to get back to that, because that really is what the appeal is about, as the court has already observed, what the appeal concerns and why we are in front of you, why we are in front of the Court of Appeals, is that there were substantial other sales of commercial properties in the community. And contrary to the assertions that have been made, that's the undisputed record. That clearly is the record in this case.
I want to stay, just before we get back to that, I'm looking at the appendix number 30, page 30 in the brief of the defendants at the transfer return. And it says, total value of real estate transferred, $22,500,000. Then I assume it's signed by your client. We declare under penalty of law that this return has been examined by us and to the best of our knowledge and belief is true and correct and complete. Now, it's my understanding that this return filed by your client is only with regard to the parcel 098 and not the other parcels. And I'm not talking about the comparable or alleged comparable hotel and motel and stuff. I'm talking about the other parcels that were sold at the time that 098 was sold. But this transfer return filed by your client, signed by your client, purporting $22,500,000, only deals with 098. Is that correct?
That is not correct, Your Honor. There are other parcels.
In
the material that were filed here, I think it's Exhibit A, and it's not connected to this material.
Well, let's take a look at page 32, which you got page 31, which is your amended transfer tax return, where there your client declares under penalty of law that the value of the real estate was $7,900,000, and that has 098 on page 32. So I took from that that was...
Yeah,
That is a separate exhibit. That's Exhibit 7 from the record. I can represent to the court that there are other parcels involved in the transfer tax return. It was the entire Noah's Ark property. In fact, if you would, I think we may have the map in our materials. If you look at our appendix, 28, increase of assessment, you'll see that where we scaled off the particular parcel, there's an 098 parcel, but the part of the Noah's Ark sale included a number of other parcels.
Is the full transfer return in the record showing what parcel the transfer return covers?
I just checked my copy of that exhibit, and I do not have the attached exhibit A to it either, but it is clear in the record, right? It's laid out in the transcript before the board review the number, and we actually list, it's a separate exhibit.
But my question is the transfer return on 098, is that clear, or is it clear that it encompasses the other alleged parcels?
I'm sorry, Mr. Conley, you'll have to stand in front of the lectern, otherwise we don't get you recorded. Thank you, Mr.
Since Delmar. It's not in the copy here, I haven't looked at the record. Do you know what's in the record?
I am not certain whether Attachment A is attached to the exhibit which was filed. I can represent to the court that in the record before the Board of Review is a detailed explanation of the additional parcels that were included as part of the sale. I would emphasize that this is not an issue, it's been observed, that we are disputing in front of the court today. We are not disputing the accuracy of the valuation of the 098 parcel, although for a lot of reasons we explained below, we don't think it was accurate. And more importantly, for purpose of this appeal, the assessor simply arbitrarily chose $18 million and assigned it as a value for the 098 property.
Let's get to that issue. You're right. Well, I'll tell you one of the problems I'm having is this. Let's say it's worth $22.5 million, and let's say he reduced it by 20% to get to $18 million. An argument is made that under the uniformity clause, you don't have to be at full value under 7032, that you just have to be uniform. And if there's an equalized value for this municipality at 80 or 81% or someplace I saw on the record 77%, seems like 80%'s right in there as to uniformity, and ergo no uniformity violation. Can you respond to that concern?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that is an argument that was made in the Court of Appeals, and Mr. Cross has resurrected it here to the Supreme Court. It's not the basis on which the assessor explained his reduction to $18 million. He really didn't have an explanation for why he reduced it to $18 million in the transcript. But let's assume that that's true. Let's assume that the reason that they reduced it to $18 million was to equalize values. They made no such adjustment in the other commercial properties it sold that year. Instead, what was candidly explained to the court, the assessor said, well, I'm going to declare that the Noah's Ark sale is unique. And because it's unique, I don't have to do anything else. And Mr. Cross said he believes that the reason the assessor did that is because he understood from the Court of Appeals decision in NS Associates that that's all you have to do. If you determine a property is unique, you don't have to look at any other sales. You don't have to do anything more. That, I think, is exactly where the assessor went off the rails and why we are before this court.
Let me ask you sort of a practical question. Assume for purposes of our discussion that the $18 million represents fair market value, and that's what Lake Delton felt it had to set the assessment at. And let's assume that they then chose on the other properties in 94 to also use the purchase price as setting as the assessed value and maybe applying the 20% to it. In order for them not to run into uniformity problems, would they then also have to do reassessments of all the comparables of those properties within their borders? I think opposing counsel raised that, you know, you wind up getting into an entire reassessment because there certainly are lots of comparables of hotels and motels and maybe miniature golf courses and other things, and that if they're to use that methodology, then they wind up having to do almost a total reassessment of their commercial properties. I mean, is that the net effect of having to do it this way?
And the answer is in NS Associates. In that case, the assessor examined the other sales, came to the determination that there wasn't a significant shift in value, more than 5 to 10% as to other sales within the commercial area. And therefore, in fact, he did it for all properties. We're only arguing that he should have done it, at least here in this case, for commercial properties. But once he reached that basic
definition as to what the range of sales were, except for the sale of the Southridge Mall, he concluded there didn't need to be any other adjustments. And in that case, I don't think there probably would need to be any other adjustment. What we have in this case are drastic increases, and I will say drastic increase because that's what it is, not only of Noah's Ark, but of at least six other major commercial properties in a very small village, representing 25%, 21 to 26% of the total commercial property within the village. At that point, is there an obligation on the assessor to look at those sales and to determine whether that kind of an increase doesn't require some adjustment of other properties? I think the answer is yes. And that's, I realize that that is some burden on the assessor, but there is some burden on the assessor every year, and the burden is statutory as well as constitutional, and that is to treat properties uniformly. If there hadn't been a major change in the value of properties based on evidence of sales, then that could have been the answer. The assessor didn't even begin to make that examination. He candidly said, and there's really no way to get a flavor of this than to just read the testimony. He candidly said that I just thought that a water park is unique, and therefore I could ignore the other properties. Now, remember, he did that, and then he said, but at least as to family land, that's a water park, so you have to make an adjustment. And the Board of Review went even further and said, we're not even going to deal with those properties which are clearly similar, clearly comparable in a strict valuation sense. We're not even going to increase family land. And the reason is exactly as Mr. Cross said, because they didn't want to start down a road which would require uniformity. That is the problem.
The trial court said the reason that they didn't increase the board didn't increase the assessment of family land is because they didn't have full financial disclosure from Noah's Ark so that they couldn't properly evaluate it. In fact, if I recall correctly, in the trial court's decision, the last page, it makes reference three or four times to not having full disclosure of sale information so as to be able to properly assess what was the correct value and apply it to family land.
The trial court did say that, Your Honor. Two things about that. One, that issue the Supreme Court has expressly said is not part of this appeal, but the second thing is that is not the basis on which the Board of Review made its decision. The Board of Review says nothing about that in its decision. What they say is that it's not fair to have not increased the other commercial properties based on sale, all of the hotels and motels, and then to have made a comparison between Noah's Ark and Family Land. Nor did the assessor conclude that he was unable to make that comparison because of any lack of information. I will say one thing about the lack of information because the court has raised it, and that is that there was never a subpoena of our client to produce any more information. There was a request at the hearing, and it was declined, and the reason it was declined was because of the confidential concerns that our client had when no other property owner, particularly commercial property owners, was required to provide any income information or detailed information about sales. And there are a lot of ways in which Noah's Ark was singled out in this community in 1994, and that was one of them. But as I say, it's not a part of the issues that this court has certified, and for that reason alone, I think it isn't a factor in the case.
Let me ask you, there is a discussion in both briefs about all the previous cases that deal with the Uniformity Clause violations or allegations of those violations. Which case do you think is most analogous to your position in this case?
Hensel and Levine, Your Honor, I think both cases. And the reason is because just on a basis of arbitrariness, this was blatantly arbitrary and discriminatory. In their failure to look at other sales, both the assessor and the Board of Review. And on that basis alone, I think there is a violation of the Uniformity Clause as well as Section 78.32, which requires that the assessor look at the best evidence of value, in this case, sales. Now, there's another level of violation here. The distinction that has been attempted to be drawn between Hensel and Levine in our case is comparability. And the argument is that, well, when you're dealing with farmland and other farmland, or you're dealing with residential homes and other residential homes, all right, maybe you can have an arbitrary factor. But when you're dealing with commercial property, not strictly comparable for purposes of assigning value, then for some reason you can ignore other sales. As a general matter, I don't think that makes any sense, and it's not consistent with the requirement that has been pointed out by this court that in Knowlton and a whole line of cases, and in fact in the argument today, that you treat property within a class and between classes on a uniform basis. And if the principal basis for assigning value is a recent sale, as it was in Noah's Ark, then there's an obligation to treat them uniformly. But assuming that that were a distinction, I think it's important for the court to realize a couple things about it. One is, commercial property has a basic characteristic, and that is it generates income. Here, our property generated income, and one of the three basic approaches to value is the income approach. There is not that great a difference between commercial property as a general matter. It all generates income. And there is a fungibility in commercial property, which to us, certainly as in terms of interpreting uniform application of the uniformity clause, does not justify distinguishing in the method of valuation, whether it's a cost approach, or comparable sale, or recent sale, or income approach, the properties within the commercial class should be treated uniformly. But even if we were to assume that wasn't a standard that's applied by this court under the uniformity clause, they threw out family land, which was plainly comparable. It is exactly Levine. It is exactly Hensel. It is a case where a comparable property was not assessed on a comparable basis.
You get the family land, and I get back to what isn't an issue. I mean, they said the reason they couldn't do it on family land is because they didn't have the financial information available. So it seems rather disingenuous for you to rely on family land not being reassessed when the basis that they couldn't reassess family land is because your client wasn't providing information.
Right. And as I say, Your Honor, that is not what the assessor said. It's not what the Board of Review said.
It's
what the trial court ultimately attempted to use to justify not treating those two properties uniformly. And I don't think it's supported by the record. The other thing the trial court refers to is ticket sales, which were pulled out of whole cloth by family land in trying to justify some distinction between themselves and Noah's Ark, and didn't have a relationship to actual gate receipts, but rather was a single event in sales of advance tickets by the state. There just was no evidence to distinguish family land. The assessor, who claimed to have the expertise, said they are similar enough that he had to adjust the value, and the Board of Review simply said, we're not going to do that because we don't like the fact that one property is being singled out, family land, when we're not adjusting other commercial property in the community. Again, I think you can see that if you look at the short transcript of the deliberations of the Board of Review itself. This was an arbitrary, discriminatory decision, and the reason they reached it is because they didn't want to accept the implications of doing anything more. And if NS Associates is a good example of what an assessor has to do before he can simply ignore all other sales, and that is he has to make a realistic study of those other sales to make sure that there really is uniform treatment.
Lake Delton argues that part of your burden is to show there's an unfair shifting of the tax burden. Would you address that argument?
I guess two things. One is I'm not sure that showing an actual unfair tax burden is required. Showing unequal treatment is required. And Hensel and Levine, in fact, don't even give you the numbers to know about the actual shifting that occurred. That is, how great a shift had occurred. But let's assume that that is our burden. We've plainly met that burden here. In fact, that was going to be my other response, Justice Bradley, to your question about family land. We're not just relying upon unequal treatment or non-uniform treatment. We're also pointing out that there is a general undervaluation of commercial property relative to Noah's Ark. We have advanced evidence to this court of almost 21 to 26% of all the commercial property in this community. One, Noah's Ark valued on a recent sale, and another large percentage, 6 to 8%, valued without any reference to their actual sale, the best evidence of value. There is a substantial undervaluation within the commercial property, within the community, without regard to family land.
If you take the approach of total value, if you take the parcel approach, how many parcels are in Lake Delton?
Total parcels? I don't have a record.
1,000.
That may be right. Commercial properties, that would not be the case. I can tell you that there's $150 million in value of commercial properties based on the 96 assessment, and I think in the materials. We can also tell, I think it's $100 million in commercial property.
You don't know the number of parcels that are taxed?
No. Otherwise, I would say, Your Honor, I would think that dollar values is much more important than number of parcels, given that we're concerned about uniform treatment of valuation, that is, of the dollars assigned.
Do you have any authority to support the proposition that it should be viewed from the dollar amount, total amount of taxable dollars as opposed to a number of parcels?
I'm addressing exactly that in Justice Geske's question, and that is, what can we show an unfair tax burden? The tax burden is based on the assessment. The assessment is on a basis of dollars, and we can show that we have shown and established as part of the record in this case that 21 to 26% of the total value of the community is out of kilter. That is, there is not an equalized valuation as to that property. Clearly, that implies a tax burden. Now, there's a suggestion in the opening brief by the village that somehow we're better off as a result of having been assessed at 80% of value than if, in some convoluted way, everyone was brought up. That's just not the case, and we've laid out in our response brief why it's not the case. The best way to view that is we're assessed at $18 million, and let's assume that that's 80% of value, so we've been brought up to 80% of value. If all of those other properties were brought up to 80% of value, there would be a substantial additional amount. Instead of 7.5%, if you took total value, 80% of that would be something like $6 million. And so that would be an increased amount of value among commercial property. It would reduce our tax burden and clearly increase the tax burden of those taxpayers. Now, of course, there's a whole other level of burden here, and that is that we would not be looking just at those hotels and motels which were sold during the year. We would look at other comparable properties, as Your Honor has suggested, and we know that if you look at values of commercial property generally, you're talking about an increase of $50 to $100 million overall. We've presented evidence as to the number of additional hotels and motels that are included in the community. There clearly was a substantial tax burden shifted away from everyone else in this community and to us. And one of the reasons why we did present you with the results of the 1996 reassessment and ask you to take judicial notice is to demonstrate that it is really sophistry to suggest that Noah's Ark was not substantially burdened as a result of the assessment in 1994. When a complete reassessment was done in 1996, our tax burden, our assessment was reduced substantially, and the remaining community was increased substantially. Ours went down $250,000. The valuation went down substantially, and the tax burden, the total commercial property, increased by $50 million.
Now, suppose, Mr. Conley, that the assessor here reassessed you on the sale price, reassessed all these other properties that have been sold that year on that sales price. Wouldn't you still be complaining that the non-sold property ought to have been reassessed upwards because there's a showing from all these sales that there's been a general increase? It may not be uniform across the board, but, you know, property values, commercial property values obviously went up in Lakeville.
We may be, Your Honor. There's at least a couple of reasons why we may not be. One is, if the assessor examined those other sales, increased them, and concluded that they were in a reasonable range for those properties, that he would have expected that kind of an increase, and that other properties generally fall within a reasonable range, as was determined by the NS associate assessor, then we probably wouldn't have a basis to challenge it. The second reason is a very practical reason, and that is, if those hotels and motels had been increased, or in a couple of cases, amusement parks had been increased, you can bet that they would have been in asking about, well, what about the other comparable properties like ours? And it's likely the assessor would have done what he didn't want to do, and what this board of review clearly didn't want to do, and that is they would have increased those other properties. One of the reasons why we have a simple requirement of the assessor to look at recent sales is for exactly that reason. He's supposed to determine, are these significant sales? Do these require some adjustment in other properties? None of that was done here. We appreciate that this implies some burden on the assessor, but what had happened here was the complete opposite. The assessor did nothing except arbitrarily decide we're unique, so he doesn't have to worry about anyone else's sales.
If we hold as you are requesting, does that mean then that every time there is a sale of property, that the assessor in the state, an assessor in the state, must reassess?
No, Your Honor, just the opposite. I think if there is a sale of property, the assessor is obligated to look at it. And if he determines it falls within some reasonable, predictable range, which is something that's readily available both to the assessor based on his past experience and also based on what the Department of Revenue provides in terms of expected ranges of sales, then he need do no more. In fact, the statute tells you when you have to do a complete reassessment. It says every 4 years, if there is within that period, any 1 year, a range of more than 10% beyond full value.
When was the last full reassessment prior to 94 of this area?
Prior to 1996. It was actually, the reassessment was done in 1996. We're talking about the tax assessment in 95. I do not know how far back. I think it goes a substantial period.
My
recollection is 1990, but I do not
know. The record says that they hired Knudsen in 1993 to do, and this is what I'm not clear on, a major reassessment. I'm not sure what they mean by major. And then they have him to do maintenance work in 94. And
I don't think there was a reassessment in 1993, although I'll defer to the court
I've
seen that in the record. I think it was a substantial period before then. All I am suggesting to the court is that where there are major sales, that is where, in the case of NS Associate, where Southridge Mall sells for $100 million, or in a small community like this one, where a property sells for, as was reported in the original transfer tax return, although amended, $22.5 million, and there is evidence of other significant sales of other commercial property, then there is some burden on that assessor to look at those and to arrive at a result. That's exactly what happened in NS Associates, and it didn't happen here at all. Nothing was done. In fact, the assessor was very candid that he didn't look at any other sales in the community for 1994.
I'm concerned by the long-range implications of your argument in terms of what it really will mean practically for assessors around the state. You seem to be arguing, and I know you just tried to limit it somewhat, but you seem to be arguing that all commercial properties are comparable one to the other. Is that not correct? Isn't that at the heart of what you're arguing?
I certainly hope not, Your Honor. It wasn't my intent. I am arguing that where you're looking at recent sales, you should have to look at recent sales of other commercial properties.
Do you draw any distinctions between the type of commercial property?
I think we may be confusing two concepts. It may not be that the court is, but perhaps I have in my statements to the court. If we're talking about a sale of a property, let's take something simple, a house. There is an obligation by the assessor to look at other similar houses, other comparable houses, that is, are similar enough by standards applied by appraisers to determine whether those houses would have to be increased as well. That's strict comparability, and that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about under the Uniformity Clause is uniform treatment of classes of property within classes of property and between classes of property. That's not something that I'm arguing the court should establish in this case. On the contrary, that's something this court established in Knowlton 100 years ago and has applied repeatedly in every case since. We're not creating any new burden.
Aren't you saying here that the water park is a piece of property, because it's commercial, that is comparable to a motel, to a restaurant, to the other properties that were sold in the year at issue?
If the only thing in this case, maybe this will help answer the question. The only thing in this case, the only issue before the court, the only thing of record, were the sale of Noah's Ark, we would have a very difficult time making the case that all of the commercial property has to be increased based on the Noah's Ark sale. There probably are unique aspects to a water park versus a hotel and motel, although I will point out in the village of Lake Delton, there are water rides and a lot of hotels and motels. But let's assume, as a practical matter, that you wouldn't increase just based on that sale. We're talking about something completely different. We're talking about other sales, significant, not minor, but major sales of other commercial properties, at least six other significant sales during the same year. And the assessor said, all right, as to those commercial properties, I'm just going to ignore them. I'm not going to consider whether I have to increase the value as required by Section 70.32 for those properties, or whether they require increase of other comparable properties. If a hotel goes up, maybe I have to increase other hotels and motels. I'm just going to ignore those completely. What I will do, though, is I'll take exactly the same evidence as to Noah's Ark and I'm going to increase theirs. That's the violation. It has nothing to do with the comparability between those other properties, strict comparability between those other properties and Noah's Ark. In fact, I think that that's a confused issue, and it's been purposely confusing.
Well, that's the issue I was asking before, sort of the methodology of making the assessment versus the comparability of the...
I think exactly, Your Honor. And methodology is what's required. Uniform methodology is what's required by the Uniformity Clause. If something as simple and as basic as the sale of the property is required under a long history of this court's decisions, and we're not asking for this court to change the law in any way, and frankly, I don't think we're asking for the court to increase the burden on an assessor who is doing their job in any way either.
Is it wrong for an assessor, and I mean contrary to law, you go to Lake Delton, I mean, I've been to all of these places, many of these places. Lake Delton is filled with hotels. You know, every other driveway is a hotel. If one of the hotels sells, then the assessor has, you're saying, has to look at it and, if appropriate, raise it to reflect the sale price. Then is the assessor obligated, or would the assessor be obligated, to reassess all comparable properties, which are these every other driveway hotels?
I don't think so.
No.
In fact, we're not arguing for anything more than practical uniformity. If the assessor looks at that sale and it increased by 10% over the prior year's assessment.
But then we're going to have someone else coming in front of us and saying, look, you up my hotel, but you didn't the other 150 hotels that are on this one road. And so I'm having an undue burden, because presumably they went up too, they just didn't sell.
I think this court can absolutely make clear that we're talking about a violation of magnitude here. If you look at page 29 of our brief and you see the kinds of percent increases, 180%, 1,000% increase, 190%, 123% increase in sales, there was no basis for this assessor to ignore those sales, either as to the individual property, which he did, or as to examining other communities. But we're talking about gradations of violation. He didn't begin to perform his duty based on major sales of commercial property except as to Noah's Ark. And I think the court can certainly craft a decision which makes a distinction between that and a minor sale, or evidence of minor sales. Your Honor, I've run out of time and I have not addressed the issue of remedy, if I can do that briefly.
Very quickly, Mr. Allen.
The only thing I want to emphasize is that this court had made clear in Levine the appropriate remedy where there is a violation based on uniformity, and that is, 3 years later, it isn't practical to go back and do anything more than to return the taxpayer to the assessment that would have been present but for consideration on an unequal basis of the sale. The reason that's really crucial in this case is we are going to be back in front of a confused Board of Review that has already attempted to try to shift the burden to a single taxpayer, and unless the remand order is clear as to what is required, I can guarantee we will have substantial disputes on remand, and I would, my client as well as I would greatly appreciate some clarity.
Was that the remedy that the Court of Appeals gave?
It is exactly the remedy ordered by the Court of Appeals.
So what would that be at the 1994 level?
The prior assessment was something $4,512,000 was the 1994 assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Conley. Counsel?
Mr. Cross, rebuttal.
On the matter of the burden that is placed on the taxpayer, I think there's a threshold question here that has to be answered by the court. In the Norquist decision, the court established the two steps that you use to analyze a claim uniformity violation, and the first one is that the taxpayer demonstrates he's been harmed. I don't think this taxpayer has shown any evidence of harm. I don't think the record shows the taxpayer is harmed. I think the record clearly shows that the 20% reduction from the reported sale price more than offset any harm that he may have suffered. More importantly, we're left to speculate because there is not evidence. There's much discussion in their brief and in his presentation that the assessor didn't do his job. He didn't do enough work. Well,
There's nothing in the record. There is no detailed analysis from an economist. There's no analysis placed by the taxpayer in the record as to the adverse impact that this evaluation would have on his property. We're left to guess and speculate, and I direct the court's attention to State X Rel Walters versus Young, I guess the seminal case on uniformity, in which it says that a taxpayer has no complaint when evaluation which could ordinarily be obtained, therefore, at a private sale is placed on his property.
Let me ask you about the harm question. If there's a violation of the uniformity clause because other properties were not assessed based upon recent sales, and if the remedy is to put Noah's Ark back at the $4.5 million, I mean, can't we assume that being that assessed at $18 million rather than $4.5 million that you're harmed? I mean, do you need proof that that's going to have a significant impact on your...
No, what you've just done is given them a windfall tax break, because the issue is not whether they're harmed, but whether there's an excessive tax placed on their property. They are not being effectively taxed.
Means tax more than other real estate?
No, more than their share.
Well, how can they not be taxed more than their share? That's another way of it.
Well,
sounds like if you're paying $18 million, paying on the basis of $18 million, you've got six properties here that range from whatever percent it is to 1,000% or 100%. You've got to have an unfair shifting.
Except, if I may, if you add up the total alleged under assessment of those properties, it's $5 million. It's a fraction of the total assessment of Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark was reduced by $4.5 million from what it should have been. This is an example of apples and oranges. On the one hand, they say that everything should be assessed at full at a reported sale price, yet they weren't. They weren't assessed at their full price. Yes, the assessor stepped across some lines to get to the number he got to, but the ultimate question is fair? Is this a fair tax? Is it fair to...